Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
For a dream ocean, you turn a tender eye to me. Cause deep as any ocean, sweet as any harmony. But she blinded me with silence.
She blinded me with silence.
Good morning and morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online anywhere in the world, apparently. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. It is Saturday the 1st of March 2025 in case you listen on catch up, and a rather cold but very sunny start to March. Got Julian Paul here live as usual, the studio on Paternoster Row, and we might even be talking about Paternoster lifts later on. Ooh. Let's see. They mentioned them on Radio 3 this week. Sheffield Arts, it's the Arts Tower, isn't it?
It is.
All very interesting. Later in the show, we'll be talking to RPG, and we'll also got a guest speaker this week. It's Phil Muffett from the Mexbet and Swinton Astronomical Society. Be doing his general Eye on the Sky update. Lots to talk about the Parade of Planets and the lunar and solar eclipses coming up in March, or at basically later this month. All exciting stuff. Next week, all being well, our guest speaker will be Dr. Ogo Osamor. All good stuff. First up is something about seagulls.
Yes. Scientists probe gulls' weird and wonderful appetites. From pilfering chips to swallowing whole starfish, seagulls are known for their voracious appetites. However, one scientist was so astounded to see pictures on social media of gulls eating weird and wonderful things that she launched a citizen science project to study their shifting diets. University of Salford ecologist Dr. Alice Risley wants people to upload their snaps of hungry gulls to the project's website, which is Gulls Eating Stuff. That's Gulls Eating Stuff.
Just Google that term and the website will come up, because I did look at it.
By studying gulls' diet, we can learn more about their behaviour, their role in ecosystems and the pressures they face in a changing world, she said. UK seabirds face threats from warming oceans, overfishing and avian flu. Seagull populations are in decline, with several species on the UK Red List of Conservation Concern. Some gulls are coming to live close to people, adding human leftovers to their natural menu of fish, crabs, starfish and earthworms. The birds may be flocking to urban areas to find food to feed their chicks during the breeding season, switching back to a natural diet once their youngsters have fledged. Alternatively, Gulls may be relying on human leftovers for much of the year as the natural food supply dwindles. The fact is, we really just don't know. There is very little data, said Dr. Reiser. The UK is known for its huge colonies of seabirds nesting on cliffs, but populations are plummeting amid the host of pressures from climate change to a lack of food.
So that's gulls eating stuff. check it out. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty by the River Don eating all sorts of Indian takeaway leftovers, yeah. And people Noms. Bring them seed and everything. But yeah, gulls eating stuff, all good stuff. Next up, epilepsy AI tool detects brain lesions that doctors may miss. An artificial intelligence tool can detect 2/3 of epilepsy brain lesions. Doctors often miss, say the UK researchers who have developed it, paving the way for more targeted surgery to stop seizures. One out of every 5 people with epilepsy, and that's a total of 30,000 people in the UK, has uncontrolled seizures caused by brain abnormalities too subtle for the human eye to see on scans. Child epilepsy experts say the AI tool has huge potential and opens up avenues for treatment, but more studies on the long-term benefits for patients are needed before it can be licensed and used in clinics. So brain abnormalities called focal cortical dysplasia are a common cause of epilepsy, especially when medication cannot control seizures. So seizures affect people in different ways. Symptoms include jerking and shaking, becoming stiff and losing awareness, and can mean regular visits to accident and emergency units. So removing a small part of the brain can be a safe and effective way of stopping these seizures. But if radiologists cannot see the tiny lesions on brain scans, diagnosis, treatment and surgery can be delayed. For this study published in JMA in Neurology, the researchers from King's College London and University College London fed their tool magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, scans from more than 1,185 adults and children at 23 hospitals around the world, 703 of whom had brain abnormalities. So the AI tool is called MELD Graph, that's MELD, was able to process the images more quickly than a doctor could and in more detail, which could mean more timely treatment and fewer costly tests and procedures. The researchers are hoping for official approval to use the MELD Graph as a diagnostic tool, but other trials are needed first to investigate long-term benefits for patients whose brain lesions are detected. In the meantime, the research team has made the tool available on open source software so it can be used for clinical research by hospitals worldwide. Cracking track there by Status Quo. Something's going on in my head because an epilepsy AI tool can detect brain lesions that doctors may miss. All good stuff. You're, of course, listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms every week. Next up, our environment update.
Yes, HSBC has become the latest bank to water down its green commitments after pushing back a key climate change target by 20 years. It had originally aimed to achieve net zero emissions from its own operations and some supply chain by 2030, but now says its plans to hit this target in 2050. In a sign of a further looming climb down, it also disclosed that it had started a separate review of its interim 2030 targets for financed emissions, which are emissions from the clients it funds.
Interesting. Environmental groups are celebrating the return of local wildlife to Hackney Marshes in East London after years of habitat loss. Kestrels, weasels, shrews, wood mice and other small mammals had been driven away by loud river parties, log burning and large number of visitors trampling over the terrain. But local volunteers have rebuilt the animals' ecosystems by coppicing trees, building log piles and creating food caches, and already the project has yielded positive results.
Next, once upon a time, house builders were compelled to hire a team of ecologists to check for newts and bats before work could get underway. Nowadays, they can use a new technology, environmental DNA monitoring from the Guildford-based company Nature Metrics, which can identify the presence of species from tiny fragments of DNA left in the water, air or soil.
Interesting. Elsewhere in the news, a newly discovered biological mechanism that makes plant roots more attractive to soil microbes could reduce the need for artificial fertilisers, according to new research. Watch this space.
Yeah, another recent soil breakthrough also found that biochar, that's B-I-O-C-H-A-R, biochar, a charcoal-like substance that can be used to improve soil structure, could also help to manage the ecological risks posed by contaminated soil.
Probably worth mentioning at this point, the RHS has launched a peat-free email advice service for all gardeners. You can just Google it or email them at peatfree@rhs.org.uk. All good stuff. Next up, meanwhile, scientists have discovered that anthocyanins, the antioxidants responsible for the bright colours in fruits and flowers, could help counter some of the harmful effects of microplastics. The research published in the PubMed Central Journal found that the plant compounds may protect against hormonal imbalances caused by ingesting the plastics and suggested they could form the basis of future medical treatments.
A new reusable red bag has been trialled as a simpler way to sort plastics and metal for recycling and reduce litter on the streets. Around 500 households will be involved in the 12-week scheme run by Bath and North East Somerset Council. The council has said the bags will take up less space than boxes and will benefit households with limited storage space. Residents chosen to take part will have the bags delivered to their homes, which will then be used to recycle household plastic bottles, pots, tubs and trays, and metal packaging such as tins, cans, foil and aerosols. The trial run from 24th of February until the 23rd of May.
An interesting one, that. Let's see what happens and if it spreads across the country. Who knows? Finally, homeowners could be charged different prices for electricity depending on where they live, under plans being developed by the government to shake up Britain's energy market. The government is considering shifting to regional pricing to allow families who live in areas with lots of renewable energy to access cheaper power.
We'll be right back.
Neighbourhood 3 there, Power Out by Arcade Fire, because we were talking about homeowners could be charged different price of electricity depending on where they live. All interesting stuff. You're, of course, listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
And happy St. David's Day, as I think it is.
It is, and I'm suffering some from sunshine shock, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's freezing, though. Never mind, eh? So what's caught your eye in the science news this week, then, Paul?
Well, a nice little thing. I think we always wonder about whether we can make a difference with the environment and things. This is a story of a little boy who is named Teddy, and he earned the nickname Sweet Tub Teddy after saving thousands of confectionery tubs from landfill.
Oh.
And it's the things that, you know, your Christmas chocolate gift box, it comes to share with the family. It's those plastic tubs that come in, multicoloured ones, and he turned up at school and found out that he'd been gifted a bench made from some of the recycled plastic tubs. So it's actually got a plaque on saying that, with thanks to Teddy for your outstanding efforts contributing in what they call the Tub to Pub 2025, co-create letters, and it's not actually written as a word, it's got co-create and the create, DCW Polymers and Macmillan Cancer Support.
Wow.
So his hero is David Attenborough, and he previously told the BBC he was angry when he found out that containers couldn't be recycled through his family's normal recycling bin. Living in Hampshire, it doesn't have the capacity to recycle the tubs through the normal collection.
Oh, boo!
So he set about collecting tubs from people's houses and bins, wrote a letter to his school. The letter wrote to the school's parents. His mum, Laura, helped him put up posters in local businesses, and a post from Teddy on Facebook where he described himself as an eco-warrior on a mission meant that he managed to gather up hundreds of thousands of tubs and save them going to landfill or into the sea. So Georgia Harlow from Co-Create 8 said, Teddy epitomises the willingness of the public to engage with recycling, adding he's a fantastic example of what can be achieved. So, bit of a feel-good story. Nice little man, and done some really good work there, and a surprising outcome.
Yeah, I suppose.
With his name on.
Yeah, brilliant. But I suppose one of the answers is the manufacturers shouldn't be selling sweets in tubs that you can't recycle.
Well, I think they can be recycled,
but not in Hampshire.
Yeah, it's the collection and sorting facilities.
Oh, interesting.
Aren't the same throughout the country.
No, so, it is a difficult one, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's really sort of quite a difficult thing. But you're talking about seagulls and what they're eating. Well, in the news today, there's a story from Aston University, where one of their microbiologists calls for public vigilance and urgent action on the danger of raw sewage in UK seas. So basically, this is Dr. Jonathan Cox, who's an Aston University microbiologist, and he's written an article for the journal Microbiology on the dangers posed by raw sewage in the seas. saying that sewage contains lots of microorganisms harmful to human health and can cause gastrointestinal, respiratory and skin infections, and people can become infected through ingesting, inhaling or contact with the water. Vulnerable groups include the older people and those with compromised immune systems, and pregnant ladies are particularly at risk. So it can also affect marine life. So he said that the water companies are responsible for up to 200 discharges of raw sewage into the sea each year. And the risks, he said, hit home when in spring 24, he himself contracted a type of bacterial pneumonia following a swim in the sea.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so he's saying that it was likely connected to an incident of sewage dumping in the area that was recorded by the charity Surfers Against Sewage just hours before he took to the water. So he's saying that even though it sounds frightening, he doesn't advise staying out of the water, but please check the water quality before visiting a beach. And Surfers Against Sewage has developed the Safer Seas and Rivers service online as an app which shows where there have been recent sewage discharges. So the government's promised stricter regulations, as we keep hearing on different things, and advanced sewage treatment technologies are available, but urgent investments required, which again is going to impact us all, I think, because we're being told that water bills across the country are going to leap and bound again this year to do some of the work that has been allowed to lapse.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because the companies are saying it's down to heavy, you know, freaks of nature, isn't it? All this weather and water, and they can't deal with it.
Yeah. But obviously, you know, they've got to put money into some of the ways that they deal with waste. And there are one or two schemes underway already. And again, the bias in the country is sort of illustrated because London is just completing its £100 billion super sewer to keep London cleaner and the Thames cleaner. But the rest of the country, there's some really sort of bad instances where sewage is being released into our rivers and streams, and it is causing a pretty widespread impact. So an interesting one, but I think one of the other things that was in the news was, again, saying that birds now appear to be inhaling microplastic waste. So it really is a problem that microplastics are getting involved. So raw sewage is the nasty part of things, but equally, we've talked quite often before about plastics entering our environment. So a good call, I think, from Aston University, Dr. Cox, and saying just be careful and check out with the Surfers Against Sewage and see if you want to get the app if you're a regular user of a dip in the sea.
Yeah, it's all interesting because it's not just one bit of the coastline, is it? It's everywhere.
Absolutely. And across the country.
Yeah.
You know, all our waterways are being affected in varying degrees. And, you know, on one sort of side of the balance, we're trying to bring back beavers and aquatic creatures into the environment to try and self-regulate a lot of the harms. And again, you know, sort of style I've talked about before, you know, this thing about having hard paved garden areas, hard paved parking areas on your house. So what used to be ground that was open to absorb water, quite often is a runoff.
Yeah, and, indeed.
Yeah, once it's run off, it goes somewhere else. And if the style is for everybody on your street to have a hard pad in front of the house, there's going to be a deluge at the end of the road.
Particularly if you live on a hill, like we do.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happens in our area. It's very hilly. You have a big, you know, you have a heavy weather and you can see bottom of the road's flooded.
And somewhere at the bottom of the hill, somebody's going to find it's flooding, isn't it? You know, I think if you add all those streets together, maybe that style thing a lot of people have got to think about. So, kind of interesting, but to the stars. I did try looking to the stars and trying to see the planets. I did get 2 days, 3 days where I got a pretty good sky after things started to clear. So I do believe I saw what I could see with the naked eye, but unfortunately I'm next to the ring road, so I've got an awful lot of light pollution around me.
Yeah.
But the very, very clear sky with a lot of planets and, again, locally passing aircraft. So you see, if you see what looks like a star with a flashing red light on the back, it's probably somebody on the way to Malaga.
Oh, it's a satellite. Yeah, it's the International Space Station or something. There's all sorts, and I'm sure Phil will tell us, there's all sorts flying around up there.
Absolutely, I think it's it is. And I mean, just to say that in the news is a story about the some new pictures of the moon have been captured by a private lunar lander. Well, last year, I think a Texan company had a proposed soft landing on the moon, and unfortunately, I think with their lander, it snapped one of the legs when it actually touched down. But they've worked around getting their experiments underway. So this is another lunar lander that's going to be landing this week. I think on the 2nd, tomorrow, is due to land on the moon. So kind of interesting. It's Firefly Aerospace, another Texas-based private aerospace company. And this is called the Blue Ghost spacecraft that's orbiting the moon. It's entered the moon's orbit on the 13th of February. And since then, the lunar lander has been preparing for its landing, and it's going to attempt to do that on the 2nd of March. And if it succeeds, it's going to become only the second private spacecraft known to have successfully soft-landed on the moon.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, so lots of things happening, I think, on that front. But I think if I can track my way...
You need to get your researcher in, Paul. Cat. Jan.
Okay. So, looking just at the moon, a lot of the time you see these things and they say that's the second shot from Texas and you wonder about the UK. Well, surprisingly, on the 25th of February, an experiment that was sourced by from the University of Oxford. It's a thermal imaging camera blasted off to the moon as part of NASA's Lunar Trailblazer mission. And its aim is to map the source of the water on the moon to shed light on the lunar water cycle and to guide future robotic and human missions in finding water. So it's a thermal imaging camera built by researchers at the University of Oxford's Department of Physics. It went onto the moon on the Trailblazer mission. Once it's in orbit, the spacecraft, which surprisingly weighs about 200 kilograms, about the size of a washing machine, and it'll map the surface temperature and composition of lunar surface 12 times a day at a resolution of 50 meters using cutting-edge instruments. It'll examine features like the permanently shadowed craters on the moon's south pole, which could contain significant quantities, and they think potentially something like 600 million metric tons of water ice.
Oh.
Yeah, so it could be used as fuel, breathable oxygen for future human moon landings. And one of the two principal instruments, the Lunar Thermal Mapper, was constructed by researchers in the Planetary Experiments Group at the University of Oxford's Department of Physics. So it's Lunar Trailblazer was selected by NASA in the Small Innovative Missions for Planetary Exploration, or SIMPLEX, programme in 2019. And that provides opportunities for low-cost science spacecraft to hitchhike on the back of primary launch missions. So this is a secondary mission that's gone up with a frontline sort of mission. So it's making better use of the capabilities of the launch craft and putting in these very important experiments to space, into orbit, and towards the moon. So once the spacecraft gets out there, it's got a relatively small engine, and it uses the planned trajectory using the gravity of the Sun, Earth and Moon to guide it into its final orbit, where it's got small boosters to propel it into the sort of space. Into orbit and manoeuvre itself ready to take up its position mapping the moon. So it was a £3.1 million funding from the UK Space Agency and Department of Science, Innovation and Technology for the group to build this experiment and get it launched as part of this simplex.
Never thing. Cheap, Paul, these things.
Never cheap, no, but I say it's interesting to see that we've got a big input into the sort of satellite payloads and a lot of things like this experimentation, where we might not have the launch vehicle capability yet, but it's very interesting to see that kind of a mission going up and know that it's a UK brains and effort made it get there.
Yeah, hitchhiking is a good term, isn't it? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But yeah.
Absolutely. And I think it's really heartening to see that we do have an input to things like that. Quite often we're sort of looking at it and wondering what happens for the UK. So I think... I'm playing while we...
Oh, yeah? Yeah. What, with the cats?
Yeah, no. Finding my way around my notes.
Paul, eh?
Final thing, you can lend an ear to this one. It's about noise-cancelling headphones. And are they to blame for young people's hearing problems? So a young lady called Sophie says her anxiety peaks if she's in a loud environment and not wearing her headphones to limit the noise. Now, I think if you probably have heard over time about the cocktail party syndrome, which is when you're in a cocktail party, if somebody way across the other side of the room happens to say your name, you'll hear it and tune into it. So you've got this sort of channeling effect, and I know I've been accused of it from time to time. You're so busy doing one thing that somebody's talking to you and you're switching attention, and it can be difficult, and you sort of see this effect. So what they're saying is, whether it's the echo of tills bleeping in your supermarket or coffee machines sitting away in your cafe, your brain's constantly working to try and decode all of these noises. But for some people, the background noises can become so overwhelming that they can't sort of recognise voices or alerts. So it's the reality for Sophie, who's a 25-year-old admin assistant in London, that's told she doesn't listen or zones out and is a bit ditzy. Well, it's this problem of filtering. So even though she can hear and can listen where the noise is coming from, she can't always differentiate what's being said, or she doesn't feel she can compute quickly enough to understand. So she had a hearing test and came back as normal. But when the private audiologist suggested further testing, she was eventually diagnosed with auditory processing disorder, APD, and that's a neurological condition where the brain finds it difficult to understand sounds and spoken words. So this has sort of triggered a thought of whether how many other people in England are now suffering from this, and they're linking it to the use of noise-cancelling headphones.
An interesting one.
So Sophie apparently wears a noise-cancelling headphones for at least 5 hours a day, or was doing. And she grew up out in the countryside, and it wasn't until she moved into London and started university she noticed that her hearing seemed to be changing, and she was really struggling to identify where sounds were coming from. So she took to not rarely attending her university lectures in person, preferring to watch them online with subtitles.
Oh, yeah.
So all the words she said sounded like gibberish when she was in the actual lecture and was trying to hear. So it's a bit of a reverse of this sort of cocktail party syndrome. There's too much of that peripheral stuff coming in for you to focus on the main thing that you should be doing. So she said it affected her social life too, and she'd often have to get up and leave bars or restaurants because of the overwhelming noise that she heard.
Wow.
So the cause of the APD diagnosis isn't known, but her audiologist believes that this overuse of noise-cancelling headphones, which Sophie, say, would wear for 5 hours a day, could have played a part in it. And then they got in touch with some other NHS audiology departments, and they've been told there's an increase in the number of young people referred to them from GPs with hearing issues, only to find their hearing's normal when tested. It's their processing ability that's struggling. So it's a more common in neurodivergent people, which we seem to be hearing more and more about these days, and those who've suffered a brain injury or got middle ear infection as a child. But it's a problem that seems to be growing. And we talked in the past about people walking the streets with earphones in and not really being aware of traffic and dangers around them. And this is one where really your mental processing capability seems to be impaired. So, an interesting sort
it
of thing.
It is. One to watch out. Auditory processing disorder, APD. All good stuff, Paul. Great
good
stuff. And we'll speak to you Monday. Glory Days Rock Show, all being well.
Yeah, I'm off to sit in a quiet corner.
Good. Bye-bye, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sound and vision there from Bowie, because our PG was talking about all sorts, but auditory processing disorder. You heard it here first, maybe. You are, of course, listening to Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital at in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. We should have Phil Muffet on the line. We hope. Thank you. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now, for people who don't know, how can this be possible? You are a member of the Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society.
True.
But not only that, you're a member of the Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, more importantly. Well, no, not more importantly. I know. So you have to give a shout out to all your couch to 5K. Because they're doing well, aren't they?
They're doing really well. Last week, there were some worried faces, but this week, they've done a 20-minute run. Solid
Amazing.
Run, no breaks. And we had some smiley faces at the end as
Excellent.
Well.
Excellent. So just shows,
really,
doesn't it?
Really well.
You started it a few years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm in my fourth year of running.
Wow.
And it's done me the world of good.
Yeah, you said, yeah. But
and
you know,
I've got some great friends out of it as well.
Brilliant. But I have to say, hats off to you all for running this morning because it was freezing. We cycled in and it was freezing cold.
It was cold 9 o'clock this morning. I will say, all this running business, being fitter helps you in so many other ways, including your mental awareness. And I must say, when I've had the dodgy days at work or I've not been feeling myself, and the times I've felt I don't want to go out and I've been out have been the best times I've been out.
And it's a social thing as well,
it
I think.
Is.
You know, you said it's a great, like your Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society, it's a group of people. It's that social interaction as well as doing the thing itself.
You think the only one with you've got problems and you think you're the only person that can't do something. And you think, why am I having trouble doing this? And actually, everybody else is in exactly the same boat as you.
It's just that, yeah, people don't
shared.
People don't talk about stuff, do they? And when you do, and you go, oh, all right, and then you feel better, don't you?
You do. And when I have a bad day with me astronomy, it's like some other people have bad days as well.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, your Clifton Park event was cancelled, wasn't it?
Yeah, due to bad weather.
Oh, you know, but what can you do? That's nature, isn't it?
Yes, I would have loved to have still done a talk, but the problem is when people come up out and expect to see through telescopes, I can't just do a talk.
No, it's hard, isn't it? So what's happening in the sky, or what has happened in the sky this week?
Okay, right. So there's been a big hype on the media about planetary alignments, and to be honest, it's not been the correct terminology. As usual, the media put stuff out that isn't exactly true, and we're getting used to this. It's been a parade of planets, not an alignment. So when the Voyager spacecraft went out back in the 1970s, that was more of alignment, because as they went out of the solar system, they passed all the planets.
Ah.
This is a randomness of the planets, as it were, because we're not going out in sequence. We're going at the all the planets are up in an evening, but they're not in order from the sun going out to Pluto.
Right.
So it's a parade, as in the traveling across the sky. However, even that's really tenuous, because I've been looking at Jupiter and Mars and I've been looking at Venus for the past 2 months, so they've been up. But so are Saturn. Saturn was up well before Christmas, and it was much, much better before Christmas. And now it's setting. The other night I tried to see Saturn, and apart from it being really close to the horizon and the sun, the atmosphere was just too bright to see Saturn. So you would have to have been really keen and have really good eyesight to have seen Saturn yesterday or even today, because it's dropping even lower. Now, we're coming up to the vernal equinox is it the 20th of March? So what's happening is the sun's coming round on the ecliptic to the equator. So and the sky's moving round, so all the winter constellations are disappearing really fast because they're fighting the sun and the Earth as it's spinning round in space. So we're going to lose Saturn really quickly. In fact, you'll not see it tonight, I don't think. And then there's Neptune, which is also going down into the sunshine. Now, Neptune is technically now the furthest planet away. It's hard to see with binoculars at the best of times because it just looks like a star. And in the evening sunset, it's even hard. In fact, I don't think you can see Neptune, to be honest. But what has come back is Mercury. So Mercury's up. just after sunset, and it's under Venus. Venus is above Mercury. So tonight, we had a new moon the other day. The moon will be 1 to 2 days old tonight. So if you can see Venus, which a lot of people think is a space station at the moment because it's so bright.
Yeah.
Just after sunset, it's really, really bright. It's starting to fall, so it's getting closer back towards the sun, but it's a crescent. So but under Venus is the moon, and it'll be a thin crescent moon, and then under the moon, lower down, is Mercury.
Wow.
And the sun. So it's still a good time to look at the planets, but I don't think I can't see Saturn, and I certainly can't see Neptune. But you can possibly see Mercury, the Moon, and Venus.
So earlier this week, then, they were saying this was the last time you would have a chance to see anything like this until, I think, 2040. That's what the...
Yes. Well, can you remember last year and the year before? We've not really talked about the planets much because most of the planets have been morning apparitions. Because we've moved around in the orbit, the planets have kind of caught up with each other in an evening because obviously we're turning round and the sun's turning, we're going round in orbit. So things have moved round. So the past couple of years, they've all been early morning stuff. Now it's in an evening and we can see all these things. But yeah, everything's in orbit around the sun. So this is why things move round. So yeah, probably next year we'll get most of the planets, but some of them will be in the wrong place for us to see. Now, you see, Jupiter is at a place now where it's at the top of the ecliptic. Now, the ecliptic is the path of the sun as it goes round. So Jupiter is now where the sun will be round about midsummer, so it's as high in the sky as it gets.
Wow.
Uranus is just to the right of Jupiter. You need binoculars to see Uranus. That's that's beyond Saturn. And it looks a bit like a star, but it's got a bit of a greenish tinge to it, and you can make a disc out of it with the telescope. And then to the left of Jupiter is Mars, and at the moment it's making a triangle with Castor and Pollux, which are the twins in Gemini. Now, last month, Castor, Pollux and Mars looked like Orion's belt because we're all in line with each other. Mars has moved to the right now. But it's going to start moving left soon because it's gone retrograde in its orbit and it's going to start moving to the left. So Uranus, Jupiter and Mars are really, really good to see at the moment because they're so high in the sky. And Venus is really good because it's about as well, last month it was as high as it gets, but it's a really, really big crescent, which is why it's really bright. So the planets are good, but this about seeing all of them on one night, it's very tenuous.
Is it? Well, you need to get right into BBC and everybody else who were on about it, because yes. Everybody was saying it. So so you as a club, you must get pretty peeved about stuff like
I sometimes think I think part of the reason is they've done it for the hype, just to get people interested.
But it's
not very nice when people... We can't see Saturn. Well, no, I can't either.
But it is a way of getting people interested, isn't it?
It is. And at least people are out looking. But I don't think people should be told misinformation.
A once-in-a-lifetime chance to see, perhaps.
But I mean, to be honest, I mean, we've been watching the planets all through the winter. And Jupiter's really good. Mars is really good. And Uranus has been brilliant. And, of course, Venus has been really good since Christmas. It's been really high in the sky. But Saturn was better last year, up to Christmas, and so was Neptune. Now, come next Christmas, Neptune will be good, and Uranus will be good again, and Jupiter will have moved a bit further along the ecliptic.
Is that because of just the time, that time cycle?
Because in orbit, I think Jupiter takes about 29 years to orbit.
Blimey.
So it'll take another 29 years to get back where it is now. So it's moving across a little bit each year. The same with Uranus. So Uranus, back in the 1980s, Uranus was over in Sagittarius. Now, Sagittarius is a summer constellation, really, really low down. I couldn't see Uranus. So I've waited a lifetime to wait for Uranus. I think it's about 86 years to go in orbit. So this year, next year, and the year after, it will kind of be at the top of the ecliptic,
wow,
which means it will be the best time to see it because it will be high in the sky, and people from the UK, it'll be your best
Really? As long as it's not cloudy or blah, blah.
Which is the usual scourge of...
of trying to look at the sky. What's... You mentioned that there's some eclipses coming up as well, if you can see them.
So there's an eclipse of the moon, and that'll be on the 14th of March. Now, the bad thing is, it starts about 4 a.m., which means I won't be up. The other thing is, it'll be around about the equinox. So the other thing is, it'll be lighter earlier. But it'll set what time will it be? I forget what time it'll set now. It'll be about 6. And then at 10 a.m. it finishes. So most of the lunar eclipse will be below the horizon. So if you're in America, you'll probably have a chance of seeing a good eclipse, but you won't from the UK.
Okay.
However, because there's a lunar eclipse, we're going to get a partial solar eclipse. So I think it's the 29th of March, if I remember rightly. Then the eclipse starts at about 10 a.m. and maximum is about 11 a.m. and then it finishes about 12 a.m., about noontime. And it's nearly, more or less, covering 50% of the sun.
Yeah.
So it should be a good apparition to see the eclipse, provided it's not
cloudy. Is that from the UK?
From the UK, yes.
Anywhere in particular that's best, or just anywhere?
Well, if you're in the UK, it'll be more or less the same all over.
Right.
So the thing is, it's looking at the sun's dangerous, so you shouldn't do it with optical equipment or even just your eyes. You want a sunscreen. You can buy, glasses, cardboard glasses with Mylar film in them, so you can look at the sun. You can buy them online. I think Philips do, solar glasses, so you can actually put them on your face and look at the sun, and you will be able to see a chunk missing out of the sun.
Wow.
Other than that, you'll have to buy a solar filter to fit on the front of your telescope, not your eyepiece, so you can look at the sun safely. But do your research before you look at the sun. Do not look at the sun with optics without any protection.
No.
Find out how to do it or you will be blind.
Yeah, or better still, wait until your club get all the pictures with all their fantastic equipment. I'm thinking of Mick Nichols here.
Yes. And the other thing is, it might be live as well. You might see it on the news or there might be a live coverage. There was an eclipse a few years back and I think Sky News add some telescopes and they did some live coverage of an eclipse.
But to be fair, your club members seem to get some great pictures of events and auroras and things like that. You just got to be in the right place, right time, I guess.
Astronomy is all about being in the right place at the right time. That's so true.
Oh, yeah, that sounded as though you really know that from experience, Phil.
Yeah. Well, it's like when I do my own astronomy at home and I'm doing any photography, I did quite a few minor planets last year, asteroids. It's picking the right time when it's in the right part of the sky, in the right part of the orbit, and the weather's right.
Mm.
Go outside, have an hour, and then put your stuff away because it's easy. It's, if you focus, I plan what I'm going to do in advance and then pray the weather's going to be okay. And then get your kit out and do whatever you need to do. And when you look at astronomers, in professional astronomers that do it for a living, that's what they do all the time. They're observing a specific object, they plan for an evening, and whatever you're looking at will determine what kit you're using and how you're going to observe it and what with, because looking at the moon is different to looking at, say, a star or a nebula. And if you're taking photographs, it's a completely different technique, and you might not have all your kit stuff out as well. And the other thing is the cold. If I'm on the patio, some nights are cold and I might only want to be out half an hour. Sometimes a couple of hours is fine, but it all depends on, is it damp, is it frosty? Just because you've got a clear night, it's not always freezing. A lot of it's down to air temperature and which way the wind's blowing. And if it is blowing, your equipment's going to be shaking, so you're wasting your time anyway. Planning whatever you're doing
is important, But it must be annoying for you astronomers then, because you wait for this time of year because the skies are darker, but actually you're more likely to be cold and, you know, yeah, bad weather.
And kit up properly as well, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So what else is going on in your club? What events
so
coming
we've,
up?
We've got talks all the way through the month. So on the 6th, we've got a talk about Skylab. On the 7th, which will be the Friday, we've got a public viewing evening, which, of course, is sold out already.
Oh, well, there you go.
Contacting us, how can I get tickets on Eventbrite to do this? 13th, we've got Chaos in the Cosmic Sky. 20th, we've got a photo competition.
Oh.
Now, I reckon the photo competition this year is going to be out of this world.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing photo competitions for the past 20, 30 years, and the photographs are getting to a point where...
So have you submitted some, or are you going to...
Not yet.
No.
I'm trying to work out what I'm going to do. I can't compete with some of the guys because...
I don't want any falling out in the club about it.
Some of the guys are doing photography that's like mind-blowing. And and on the 27th, we've got a guy talking on smartphone astrophotography.
Brilliant.
So, and that's right up my street.
And you get some great speakers from, you know, from universities and everything, don't you?
Oh, we get some terrific speakers. Roy Gunson sorts out some, our speaker finder sorts out some really good stuff. It's like, I don't know how he gets them all, to be honest.
Well, for them, it's continual professional development, probably. It's probably as interesting for them to spread their research to you because you're interested as well.
Well, the really good thing is, I mean, you can read all these magazines and research papers, but being in a club, you have a doctor or a physicist or a scientist from anywhere, and I mean literally anywhere, dealing on anything from black holes and supernovas and quarks to like taking photographs with your smartphone.
Yeah.
And it's like you can talk to these people and ask them questions, and you find out stuff listening to these people and asking questions, because we also have questions and answers about stuff you don't read in magazines.
Exactly.
They'll also tell you the backstories and interesting things that have happened to them that they just don't write about.
No. Brilliant. I'm gonna have to let you go there now, Phil, because number
right.
one, we're, the film show about oh, I know, the film show coming on. But all being well, there's 5 Saturdays in March, so you might be back at the end of the month.
Yes.
If you're not on holiday.
Okay.
Bye-bye, well, Phil.
Guys, everybody.
I know. Right, thank you. Thank you, Phil. Bye. Bye.
Cheers, bye.
Bye-bye.
Confusing these days, but burned us will come.